Hello, Mountain Brook. It's Donald Clayton, principal at Mountain Brook Junior High. I'm here once again with Dr. Dickey Barlow, our superintendent. Today, we are focusing on a conversation around how to create a home learning environment for your elementary student. This one's going to be a lot of fun because we are going to have three callers that are going to join us today in this conversation on how to create a home learning environment for your elementary student. Dr. Barlow, who will we have joining us today?
Yes, Donald, we're really excited about the people that we're going to interview. The first one is Stacy Dorston, who is a math coach in Mountain Brook Schools and does a fantastic job. And then we're going to hear from Caroline Peak. Caroline is an elementary school teacher, second grade teacher, and Caroline's done a great job. She actually was a teacher for one of my children and has a lot of insight and creating a learning environment. And then the last person we will talk to today will be Salter Heidinger, who's a student in Mountain Brook Schools and also very insightful and thoughtful in how to create a learning environment.
Before we get into our callers, is there any thoughts or anything you want to share with our community?
Yeah, you know, there really is. You're going to listen to these interviews, and before you do, I just want to say a few things. One is there's a chance when you listen to these interviews, you start thinking that, oh gosh, I've got to do all these things to be a good parent at home as far as this e-learning environment goes. And I want to tell you what I told our faculty at the beginning of this week as we went through our virtual conference in learning how to create an e-learning environment for our students. And that is, you know, first of all, we all just need to take a really deep breath and slow down. Second thing I'd say is we got to give each other a whole lot of grace. When you're talking to your children and yourself, we need to be patient in that and just know we're doing the best we can. One thing I said to our teachers, I said, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. We've already made a lot of mistakes. In fact, you know, everything changes so rapidly now that we'll make a decision and we'll realize in 15 minutes that we need to go a different direction. And it looks like you made a mistake, but you didn't. It's just the environment changed. Yeah. And this is what has happened to our families, is that the environment has changed. You know, our children went to school for their learning, and now all of a sudden they're going to be home. And there's a stay-in-place order by the governor now, and so most people are going to be at home, and it's going to cause a lot of stress.
Right.
And so I just would like to say to our families, just take a deep breath. You know, what I want to remind people is that we are in a community and a nation right now that's grieving. There are things that have taken place in our community and in our lives that they're just dramatically different. Mm-hmm. And I had to even go so far to say that a lot of us are in shock. We still can't believe what has happened in the last 3 weeks. And now our kids are going to be doing their schoolwork from home. And so the last thing I would say to everything, to everyone, is don't create a war zone just to make sure your kids get their work done. You know, your family is much more important than the work your children do at home. And so help encourage your children. Try to motivate them, and just do the best you can. Give everybody a little bit of grace. And when you listen to these podcasts, these people, take what you think is good advice and try to use it. And for those things that you think, I can't do that, then don't try. It's okay. It's okay. That would be my advice for everybody before we listen to these interviews.
Yeah, I know that's personally for me, uplifting and very comforting. And I appreciate how you've told me several times there's going to be a lot of things going on, a lot of different things happen, but don't lose your family through this. And so I think that's something we can all really hear and focus on. Thank you for that, Dr. Barlow. I will now turn it over to you to introduce our first caller.
The first one is Stacy Dorston. Hey, Stacy, thanks for being with us. You know, we just wanted to have a podcast where we're getting ready to go into our e-learning format or platform on Monday. And I know there's been a lot of anxiety about what this is going to look like. And one of the things that we just like to do is spend a little time just helping parents setting up a physical environment that's conducive to learning. And so we just thought we'd ask a couple teachers what they thought. And you came to mind right away. I mean, being a math coach, and you actually are a coach of teachers. And so let me just ask you a few questions here. And so put you on the spot. Tell me, what would you tell if you had some parents just call you up and say, Stacy, what should we do? What are some basic recommendations you would make to parents about setting up a learning environment in the home?
Well, first, thank you for asking me. I think if a parent called me and asked what I thought in regard to setting up the learning environment, I would first ask them, what are you doing that's already working for you? So if you already have an established spot where your child does their homework every evening or where they enjoy reading and it's working, I would stick with that. If they don't have anything to spring off of like that, then I would recommend them getting with their child and just having, you know, kind of a good discussion of, we need to set up a workspace. Where do you think a good place to work would be? And it needs to be free of distractions for the most part. it needs to have good lighting. It needs to feel comfortable and warm and just somewhere where you think you could really do some good work and be the best you could be. And just see how that conversation plays out and see where your child would select. Children are smart. They know where they do their best work.
God, that, you bring up a great point, though. So it's the key point I heard in this is to have conversations with your children. So it's not just, hey, here's where you're going to do your work. I'd clean this room out for you or this closet in for you, and here's where you're going to go. I've moved all your clothes out of the closet, and in you go.
I feel like we do that anyway, don't we? Clean out their spaces.
So you think it was healthy to have conversations within the family about where this place is, right?
Absolutely. And it would not surprise me, because my own children did this when they were younger. My children liked to actually work in the same room that I was in or that my husband was in. Huh. And so, you know, just like kids like to parallel play next to someone, oftentimes they like to work by themselves next to or near someone. Hmm. So, yes, I think a conversation is important, because we do need to set up the attitude of, we need to be productive and get some things done during this time.
Absolutely, Stacy. You talked a lot about, really I'm hearing you say a familiar space and something that's kind of in a routine for our students. Are there certain things you recommend that are in place wherever they choose, or things that you think should not be there?
I don't think it's wise, or I don't think it would be as beneficial if it were an area where like, oh, this is the family room or the game room. This is where we play pool or ping pong or you know, video games.
Right.
Or I don't think that would be the best spot. Or for that part, a space where maybe, you know, there's a TV or, you know, kind of set apart. I'm sort of envisioning, you know, the island in my kitchen or the dining room table or, you know, just a place sort of free of the majority of the distractions that take place in the normal household.
That's a great point, Stacy. Let me ask you another question. So let's say, you know, in the Barlow house, we set up an environment and we feel good about the place that we have. What advice do you give parents to help their children stay motivated? Because the teacher's not right there, right? I mean, usually the teacher motivates the student in the classroom, but now the teacher is given the instruction and hopefully some type of engaging work. And so what do you do in the classroom that would kind of transfer over to a home environment that a parent, let's say you're working with your child in the room, and I just saw on my phone that there's a stay-in-place order now in the state of Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so so it looks like maybe everybody's going to be working from home. So, and if that's the case and you're working next to your, you know, your children, how can you help them stay motivated during that time? That was a long question right there, wasn't it?
with lots of answers, I think.
We were testing your motivation.
One thing that I think is helpful is if there is a schedule. And again, you could have a conversation with your child about, hey, when is a good time for you or us to be devoted to working? Is it before lunch? Is it after lunch? You know, so kind of come up with a common schedule of this is a good time when I can accomplish this. Do things in chunks. You know, work maybe 30 minutes, take a break, walk around the house, get a snack, have a drink of water. Just move around. And we do that in our classrooms. You know, we do that in our classrooms. We're not just sitting behind a desk and the whole time. Move around. But I do think a schedule is helpful. I also think, especially for smaller children, they like to see or add to like a concrete representation of getting things done, just like adults, like a checklist.
Right.
Smaller children really like being able to, I don't know, I'm just coming up with an example here, like a Cheerio chain. For every task that they've completed on their assignment sheet, they could string a Cheerio on a, you know, on a string. And, you know, just little things like that. Or a Lego tower. For everything you've done, you can build up on that tower.
Yeah, that's good.
So they like that visual representation of, I have completed this.
Right.
I get just serious satisfaction out of seeing a checklist with a check next to everything. So,
now, Stacy, I got a quick question for you that's a little bit off topic, but when you're doing a checklist, if you've already done something, will you write it down and then check it off? You don't do that, huh? I do. If I've already done like three things and I'm doing a checklist, I'll write those three things down just so I can check them off so I can feel good about myself.
I do them and then put the Cheerios on the chain instead of writing them down.
Yeah, we're going to have a bunch of Cheerio chains. You know, I actually, if there's something I'm avoiding to do, And I do other things to avoid that. I will write those on my list to justify that I haven't done the main one.
That's funny. Well, all right. One last question, Stacy. If you think that your child's fallen behind, and you know, there's just a lot of angst and a lot of anxiety and all of this, and so I think people are concerned that their child's not going to keep up, or they're going to fall behind in some way. What do you do if you're a parent and you're a little concerned your child's fallen behind?
I would reach out to the teacher. And also, I just want to put out there that our teachers are so conscientious. They have their thumb on the pulse of what's going on right now. And at the beginning of next year, they are going to be, or we are going to be, especially hypersensitive to where everyone is coming in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But I would reach out to you, I would reach out to your teacher.
Okay.
And read. Have your kids read. I know I'm the math coach, y'all, but read. You just can't get enough of that, and just good facts in regard to fluency within your facts. That's super, you know, those are the building blocks.
Right.
So I would just encourage, that's what I would encourage.
Okay, that's great advice, Stacy. Hey, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you spending time with us. And you can tell that you are an expert, and also that you care deeply about children, and that's a great quality that you have. So just want to thank you for your time.
Thanks, Stacy.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Always enjoy talking to Stacy. She is just a very wise person, and grateful that she's a part of our school district. This next person, Caroline Peake, again, I mentioned she's a second grade teacher, and so let's go ahead and listen to Caroline. Caroline, so grateful that you're here with us today. You know, I guess the first thing I'd ask you, and what we're asking all of the teachers that we're interviewing today, is if a parent called you up and said, Caroline, just tell me, you know, I'm going to have my children home now, and I'm trying to set up some place where they can learn effectively in our house. What are some basic recommendations that you would make?
I would begin with recommending finding a common space in the home that is somewhat public, yet free of both visual or audio distractions.
Uh-huh.
And I would also recommend steering away from bedrooms and setting up a desk or a table in a neutral area where there's little to no traffic flow in the home. And for students who might be recording products that they are sharing, I would encourage this to be a place where there is a good background and it's quiet, and for students to wear something similar to what they would wear on a typical school day.
Right.
I think it would also be beneficial to set up this space near an outlet in case a charging need arises.
Good
and
point.
Just thinking through logistics, just to have sufficient light and things like a notebook, writing tools, possibly headphones, tissues, just to prevent your student from consistently getting up to get needed items and possibly becoming distracted from the task at hand.
Right. All right. So I'm already going to stray from the questions that we were going to ask you. You know, so you're a second grade teacher, correct?
That is correct.
And so let me just ask you, if I have a second grader at home, or even a fourth grader, how long do I need to expect my child to work, you know, focused for a period of time? Can they work for an hour? Should they work for 5 minutes, 10 minutes before you just kind of let them take a break and get up and get the wiggles out?
Sure. I think that would vary based on the learner, and nobody knows a child quite like their parent. And I trust that parents are perceptive to when their child is tuned in and when their child is checking out. And I would hope that a classroom environment is somewhat emulated and that there is time for focused work, but there is also built-in time for brain breaks where your child is up and moving, having a change of scenery, doing something different than only being connected to a device or a project that they're working on with school. I think that most all students, regardless of their age, thrive in a setting where there is a certain degree of structure in place, but there's flexibility to move with their needs.
Yeah, Caroline, you talked a good bit about kind of getting a familiar space and staying in that familiar routine, and even so much as getting up and putting on the same clothes, which, by the way, I'm a big sweater vest wearer. Should I wear a sweater vest even though it's going to be hot outside right now and stay in my routine?
Hey, you know, I say if it makes you comfortable, okay, roll with it.
Well, I actually tuck my sweaters in too, but I get made fun for that.
Yeah, set you up for success.
There you go. Tell us, when you talk about being comfortable and being in your space, what are the things that need to be in that space? And you've kind of touched on these a little bit, but what are some things that for sure shouldn't be in that space?
Yeah, I think that it would be helpful if food and drink is absent from that space and it is designated for work versus mealtime. That would also prevent the possibility of any problems with something spilling or messing up a nearby device. And I'd say, if possible, that space is void of noise and family members walking back and forth behind the student or near the student, and just in general, hopefully free of as many distractions as possible.
That's a great point, Caroline. When we talk about, you know, what you should have and what you shouldn't have in a classroom, a learning space at home.
That is our classroom now.
That's right.
Exactly right. It is a classroom now. Is that a conversation you have with your child, or is that just something the parents should just say, hey, this is where you're going to be?
I think that students take ownership when they have some input. But I could also see a need for direction and guidance when setting up something that's new and uncharted territory. So I could see a combination of those things, student input, but also some direction from parents or guardians.
Yeah, when you're talking about, direction, tell us a little bit about what strategies teachers use in the classroom to help students stay focused and motivated, so that our parents may know some of those strategies as well to be able to give some of that guidance and direction that you're talking about.
Okay, some of the first things that come to my mind are setting attainable goals, and that links back to earlier in our conversation with, you know, how long is your child expected to work, and is there a need for breaks? And I think that breaking tasks into manageable chunks can seem very doable for students. And I would also suggest, if conversing with your child and giving them feedback, that positive feedback preceding a suggestion or some constructive criticism can really seem to make a learner more receptive to what that feedback is. And again, I would encourage brain breaks to be integrated, where students have the ability to have a change in their environment and a change in what they are doing. I think that also a designated e-learning time that works for both the student and their family could help develop a routine and a sense of familiarity as students continue this e-learning process.
You know, Caroline, I actually have a personal second grader at home, and I feel like sometimes when we have those attainable goals, and you're talking about positive feedback, and I feel like sometimes we don't feel like we can stop and celebrate with them every now and then. What kind of feedback, what does it look like in the classroom, and how do you guide parents at home to set these goals and then celebrate with them when they've achieved them, whether it's a short period or an entire day?
Sure. I think that it can happen organically, and does most of the time. But if you were to ask your student to share a product that they're working on or a product that they believe is completed, then while that child is sharing, it can be helpful to be listening to them and also thinking about what you notice specific to that product and formulating in your mind a specific compliment that you can share with your child to celebrate a success that they've had, and then also thinking about some kind of teaching point or advice that you might give them. I think that there's a fine line between a parent lifting the level of the thinking and doing the work for the child versus just giving specific feedback. Maybe, have you thought about this? Or can you tell me more about why you chose to do this? And just asking some open-ended questions that invite the student to think in a new way about their work.
That's good.
Yeah, I love that answer right there, Caroline.
So it's kind of, I think about an acronym. Is there sharing? You are assessing them, you're thinking about things you notice, but also formulating a compliment and then turning around and teaching them something that they may not have thought about.
Right.
That's good. All right, so I'm at home. I have a child at home, and we're working together. I'm doing my work because we're at a stay in place now, and my child's doing their work, and I'm not quite sure that they're getting it. What advice do you give the parent if they feel like their child's falling behind, or even if they just don't know where their child is?
I would first suggest talking with the child and engaging in conversation with them, checking in and asking what their plan is for the day and what they are expecting to accomplish. And I think it will likely be clear if the student has an agenda or is aware of an agenda. And if they're not, I believe that teachers are working to very clearly communicate expectations that you have access to and could relay to your child as a reminder if needed. I think that starting e-learning this week, it's going to be the newest it's ever going to be for us. And so I would expect there to be a potential for some more scaffolding to be in place from adults, but then a gradual release of responsibility to follow fairly quickly and for students to begin to take ownership of what this looks like for them and what their expectations are. I would encourage parents, if they feel like after talking to their child and after reviewing expectations that have been communicated by teachers, if there still seems to be an issue, teachers are accessible, and I would encourage them to reach out to the teacher if concerns remain.
That's great. Caroline, I just want to thank you for your time. I know that you didn't have to do this, and you've got a lot of things going on, and you're preparing for Monday too, and it's obvious that you have a lot of wisdom on what's best for children and how to set up their environment, and I just want to thank you for your time.
Well, you're very welcome. I enjoy talking with both of you.
Thanks, Caroline.
We'll talk to you later, okay? Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And Caroline has a lot of great things to offer, and we're very lucky to have her in our school district. I think our listeners are really going to enjoy this next one as well. Dr. Barlow, who do we have?
Salter Heidinger. She's a student in Mountain Brook Schools, and I think people are really going to enjoy this interview. Salter has a lot of great insight and wisdom in this issue.
And Salter, it's great to be with you again. As you've done some virtual work as a Mountain Brook student over the past few years, we want to kind of hear your thoughts from the student perspective on what it looks like. What are the habits, the routines, the rhythms that are important for a student to be successful in a different environment? In this case, at home, since we're going to have a shelter in place, what does it look like to be successful at home as opposed to in the traditional school setting? So as a student who's transitioned from traditional school setting to online, what did you find were the most important things for you to get set up?
Well, for me, I found that designating my personal space to study was really important to me. I set aside a separate room, a separate table in the kitchen that said, hey, to my parents, to my brother, this is my space to study. When I'm sitting down and I'm studying, I need y'all to be quiet. I need y'all to go in a different room, just so they know that I'm studying. And I would recommend to all students with siblings at home, with pets at home, with parents at home, to find their own personal space to study. Also, I love my agenda book. So even though you don't have teachers in class telling you what to do on a specific day, I would still plan out your week, plan out your day, just so you stay on track so you don't get sidetracked, you know, feeding the dog, going outside, getting distracted by your phone. So those two aspects were really important to me when transitioning.
Hey, Salter, this is Dr. Barlow again. I said I was going to let Mr. Clayton ask all the questions, but I just realized that your brother is now going to start e-learning at home. And
he
so
is.
How is that going to affect you? What have you thought about, you know, are y'all going to be in the same room? Are you going to be in a different room? How's that work? Because there are going to be a lot of families with multiple people doing e-learning at the same time.
Yes. So my brother and I have already come up kind of with a plan and a layout to where, like, I'm fortunate to have, like, my own room to study in, and he'll study probably in, like, the kitchen, like, the dining room table, or at, like, his own, like, study table. I would recommend to everybody not to study in their bedroom just because, like, that can get sometimes tricky, like, going to bed or, like, being on your phone. So I would recommend, like, sitting up, sitting, like, you're in a desk to study. So, yeah, my brother and I, Grayson, we've worked out kind of a schedule on, like, who's going to study when, like, when, like, really quiet times are for reading, for note-taking. And, you know, like, we schedule breaks to, like, get on our phone or go, you know, take a walk outside with the dogs. But, yeah, I would definitely recommend making a schedule or, you know, just sitting down and talking with your siblings, with your parents, to come up with a plan.
Yeah, so what I've heard from you is make sure you got a space, make sure you got your agenda, make sure everybody in the house knows what's going on and who all is where and what they're working on and those type of things. Tell us, Salter, as you've done this the last couple of years, what have you learned from doing your learning online, and kind of what are some of the positives that you take away from the experience?
I've definitely learned to manage my time really well. Like, if I want to go out of town on Thursday or Friday, which we can't obviously do now, but, you know, if you want to go out and take a walk in the afternoon, I've learned to manage my time and prioritize, okay, I need to get, you know, tasks A, B, and C done this morning so I can go do what I want to do in the afternoon. I've learned to take an initiative in my own learning, which has been really helpful. And I've also learned to hold myself accountable because of the freedom I have. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I'm very fortunate to have the freedom, but also I need to learn, you know, when I need to sit down, when I can take a break. So it's been really beneficial.
Has that been the hardest challenge for you, or is there something that's kind of been a bigger challenge outside of that kind of, you know, knowing how to go through the process?
For me, like, being in regular school, that really wasn't a huge issue for me. My biggest, challenge transitioning from traditional school to the online setting was probably not having a teacher, like, face-to-face directly in front of you to ask questions, to go up to, and get them, like, to work out a problem, like, right in front of you that minute. So going back to, like, that taking initiative in your learning, you know, I've had to resort to other, like, online resources, you know, text friends. So that was definitely my hardest challenge because I love to interact with the teachers. So that was hard.
I get that, Salter. I have a question for you because you made a comment and you said, and this is kind of off track of our questions, but you said, you know, don't do your learning in your bedroom. So my question to you is, did you have to learn that, or did you just come up with that?
So from about 6th or 7th grade, my mom always told my brother and I that your bedroom is a place of, like, rest and sleeping, and so homework and work should not be associated with that. The two should be separate. So that's why, like, I, you know, found a space in my house where it was, like, my study space with all of my binders, like, all of my pencils and all of that. But I do get up every morning about 7 o'clock. I get up, like, I get dressed, I feed the dogs. And, like, I probably don't get started till about, like, 8:30. And I work probably from about 8:30 to 11, like, throughout. And then I'll take about a 30 to 45 minute break, like walking outside, like playing with dogs, getting on my phone, and then I'll start back studying for about like 12:15 to 2, and then until like all my work is done for the day. And then when my work is done for the day, then I put it up, I'm done with it for the day, and I'm able to do what I need to do.
Great advice.
Yeah, you are an agenda person. I really enjoy hearing that. I'm actually trying to jot all this down, Salter, so I can take some notes here and figure it out. Hey, so this is your chance right here, Salter. I'm hoping a whole lot of Mountain Brook schools or students are listening. What advice, having done this, what advice do you give them as they start next week on this e-learning journey for, you know, just the remainder of this semester?
I don't know, as I said, find a space that works for you. Don't change your study habits just because you're at home. If you like studying in your bedroom and it works for you and you do well, study in your bedroom. If you like studying at night and that's like when you do your best work, then study at night. Obviously, I'm a huge proponent. I love the morning, so I get up. That's when I do the best work for me. But find what works for you. Hold yourself accountable. And when you create a schedule, stick to it. Don't change it just because of one thing. And I would say like probably every 2 or 3 weeks, since we will be home for a while, every 2 or 3 weeks you can change your study space. Just like to change it up and follow your agenda.
Yeah.
write down stuff in your agenda and follow it.
Salter, you're wonderful. We really appreciate you taking this time to be with us and really just share. I've always known you had lots of wisdom for your age, and so I appreciate you taking this time to share the wisdom with our community.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I wish everyone the best of luck.
Thanks, Salter. You're a gem. Thanks for spending time with us. Great advice for us all.
Of course.
We'll see you later, Salter.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Salter. That was great, wasn't it, Donald?
Perfect.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons we talk about student voice so much in our school district is that when you listen to Salter, you understand that teenagers, high school students, junior high students, they understand a lot, and they're very wise and can think through issues, and Salter has just done a fantastic job in thinking through that issue. So we're extremely grateful for her and for all the people that we've interviewed today.
Yep. All right, perfect. Mountain Brook, thank you, Dr. Barlow. Thank you to our sound booth here that's always working behind the scenes. Hey, again, we hope you guys continue to stay well, and we look forward to the day that we're able to see you again soon.